Data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention revealed substantial influenza activity in the United States in December and January, with particularly concerning trends among children. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Sonja Rasmussen, a professor in the Department of Genetic Medicine at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine. Dr. Rasmussen has co-authored a perspective article about factors contributing to the intensity of influenza activity during this current season. Dr. Rasmussen, how do recent measures of influenza cases, hospitalizations, and deaths compare with those from previous seasons?
What is really different is the intensity of the flu season, as you said. We've seen really high levels of outpatient visits for influenza-like illnesses, the highest level in nearly 3 decades, and primarily really led by pediatric visits.
In fact, what's known about the severity of influenza activity in children in particular, and what's causing it?
The activity in children we're seeing with the effects of hospitalization rates being high, we've had the highest weekly level since 2009, and we have a significant number, sadly, of pediatric deaths already. As of last week, there were 52 deaths from influenza in kids in the United States, and that's compared to 47 last year at a similar time. And last year was really a very severe year for influenza deaths, with 289 deaths total. And why is this happening? It's really a combination of things, as our perspective noted, a combination of antigenic drift and then anti-vaccine shift. Issues related to what the flu virus does every year, it changes, and it changes to evade immunity. In addition to that, we have anti-vaccine shift, more and more concerns, more and more vaccine hesitancy that's making fewer people get vaccinated. And I believe it's a combination of those two factors.
So, in fact, in your article, you do talk about the viral factors and then the host factors. You say vaccine hesitancy. How have individual behaviors and policies at the community and at the national level affected influenza activity?
Fewer people are getting vaccinated now than compared to, say, pre-pandemic. If you look at the vaccination rates again for kids, it was 57% in the 2019-2020 season. This year, more than 10% lower than that at 45%. This is as of the same time. So this is as of last week compared to about the same time in the 2019-2020 season. Adults are getting vaccinated at lower rates too. And those lower rates of vaccination mean more people get sick and more people get hospitalized and more people die.
And then getting back to the viral factors, you say in your article that one way to address the antigenic drift that you talked about would be to improve global virus surveillance. So, what opportunities exist for partnerships in that area, given federal decisions to reduce global health collaboration?
Because our vaccines are primarily based on egg-based technology right now, and that takes a lot of time. That means that we need to make decisions about what strains are going to be included in next year's vaccine beginning in about February. And to do that, we need to have as much information about what's circulating, not only in the Northern Hemisphere, but also in the Southern Hemisphere. That really requires us to work with other countries, and traditionally that's been through the World Health Organization. Our recent federal decision to remove the United States from the World Health Organization decreases our access to those viruses that help us get smarter about what vaccine to make in the future, and that makes me concerned.
You talk in your article about moving beyond egg-based production. What types of emerging technologies have shown promise, and how could they improve on the performance of current vaccines?
Yeah, we really do need better vaccines. We need vaccines that are more nimble, that we can make more quickly so that we don't have to make a decision in February. And mRNA technology is one way that we could do that. mRNA vaccines, as we recall from COVID-19, can be made more quickly. You can figure out what virus strains we need to put in a vaccine, and we can make them more quickly using that technology. There are studies that have shown that a vaccine like that could work, but again, the Department of Health and Human Services in the United States has canceled funding for that research and development, and that puts us at risk. That puts us at risk not only for future influenza seasons, but it makes us more vulnerable in a future influenza pandemic.
Finally, you've talked about the importance of increasing influenza vaccination rates. What can individual clinicians or individual communities do to promote trust in vaccines and facilitate vaccine uptake?
We need more people to get vaccinated. We can have the best vaccine in the world, but it won't work if people don't get the vaccine. And as the old adage goes, vaccines don't save lives, vaccinations do. The data have shown people listen to their doctors. Not always, but they listen to their doctors more than what they hear from CDC, more than what they hear on the news. They listen to their doctors. And so I think it's really important that physicians continue to give a message that the flu vaccine, although it's not perfect, it does work and it can give protection. Even in years where there's been some antigenic drift, it can still give protection against influenza hospitalizations and severe disease, against hospitalizations and deaths.
Thank you, Dr. Rasmussen.